There was a young man who lived in a big city, in a large, impersonal apartment building, where he knew none of his neighbors. He worked all week long for a large, impersonal company, where he knew very few of his colleagues. And in the evenings, he usually hung out at singles bars, where no one knew anyone else. And so he was happy once a year to spend his vacation back home in his old neighborhood, where everyone knew just about everyone else, and everyone was friendly. Now, while the big city with its downtown living was certainly fascinating, he discovered that it could also be very lonely. So the first night he was home, he had a bit too much to drink at the neighborhood bar with his old schoolmates, and the next morning his mother let him know it. Then the next night he went out with an old girlfriend, and word quickly got around that surely he was about to rekindle an old flame. The parish priest happened to meet him the next Sunday as he was walking into church, and the priest whispered that maybe it might be a good idea for him to go to confession first before he received Holy Communion. So it seemed that there was simply nothing he could do back in the old neighborhood that just everybody didn't know about the next day. And even his friends and family were leaning on him about all those bad habits he had picked up in the big bad city. "You can't go home again," one of his singles bar's friends said to him when he did return. "Who would want to?" said the young man. Now, our story really isn't fair to those neighborhoods that are quite often rather cosmopolitan and liberal places to live in. But the little story does make a point that local communities do provide enormous support, yet they always at the same time exercise enormous control. In fact, just as recently as the last century, in rural communities in Europe, the officers of the community could refuse a young couple the right to marriage, even if they were in their 20s, if they simply decided that they didn't approve. Community, in other words, is something wonderful, unless you happen to be a dissenter within that community. Then you do have real troubles. It's good to celebrate Father's Day on Trinity Sunday, since the fathers, the families, help to create community. And community is really what the Holy Trinity is all about. On this Holy Trinity weekend, we celebrate the fact that our God is a community. Our God is a pattern of relationships. It means there is so much knowledge and so much love in our God that God's knowledge and love become personified. Our God subsists in a pattern of personal relationships that constitute a triadic community of the Trinity. Now, it's a doctrine intended not to baffle us or confuse us or even an attempt to provide some kind of challenge to our faith. Rather, it's intended to illuminate us on how wonderful our God really is. And it teaches us there's so much real love in our God that it really requires three persons to contain it all. And this wonderful, mysterious, dynamic activity goes on constantly within the spirit of each one of us. Where do you think it happens? Up in the sky somewhere? No, in us, personally. The Father lives in us and loves the Son who lives in us. The Son loves the Father. And here within each one of us, this wonderful mystery takes place. The Spirit is created. And that powerful mystery taking place in each one of us is reason to compare how useful this community, the Trinity, which enhances the distinctive quality of each one of the persons, compare that with what happens in so many of our human communities, which quite often constrain their members to fit into a rather rigid pattern of behavior and attitudes. Conformity was not something thought up in suburban America in the late 1950s. Conformity has been part of our human condition ever since we came down out of the trees and walked out on our hind legs from the forests into the grasslands. It's not merely the post-World War II suburbs where conformity exists in today's American society. Conformity is found today in some way in the academic community, artistic community, the literary community, the media. They all have their own particular kinds of rigidities, the constraints, their taboos, their conventional wisdoms. Isn't it ironic that even though community really comes into being in order to strengthen the talents, the abilities of the individual members of the community for the good of the community, yet so many human communities seem in reality to do everything they can to reduce the individual to an unimportant, faceless cog in the machine. In fact, one of the worst problems facing religious life in America stems really from the fact that way back in the middle years of this century, some, not all, but some of our religious communities seemingly tried to suppress all diversity, all variety, all individual talents and creative abilities. And thank God that has changed drastically in the last several decades. But the ill effects of those kinds of intolerance continue to haunt some of our religious orders of men, perhaps even women, I don't know. The creativity and the talent of the individual person was not always seen as a gift from God that should be protected and developed, but sometimes it was considered almost to be the work of the devil, something to be restrained and even destroyed. And that kind of waste of talent apparently did not seem to be a bad thing, but pride in talent always was. Anyone who wanted to use their talent ipso facto was guilty of pride. And even in families, remember the enormous pressures that so often are brought upon children, and sometimes spouses. Any children or any spouse who happened to be a little different, particularly the child who happened to be talented or ingenious. It was thought, could it be that perhaps the gifted child might be a threat to the other children because that child was simply too bright to fit in? So then, do you support the talented child at the expense of the other children? Or do you try and keep peace in the family and thus discourage the talented little child? Or is there another answer that we could find on the Feast of the Trinity, where each one of the persons has a distinctive role to play? The lesson of this mystery is that everyone in a family or in a community should really rejoice and celebrate for the very greatest development of each and every individual member of that family and community. Now, human communities may know that in theory, but they rarely support it in practice. Yet our God, working through the Holy Spirit, the spirit of creativity, of diversity, the spirit of ingenuity and spontaneity, has filled this beautiful world with an enormous amount of human creativity and ability and talent. Today we must learn to form families and communities that will help each other member develop their unique special abilities. Be honest with yourself. How often have you been forced back into line by community or family pressure, even when what you were doing was good and legitimate and in keeping with your own personal abilities and talents? Or how many times, in all honesty, have you done that to others? Do we really look upon our God as the spirit of creativity living within each one of us? If we don't, is it perhaps the reason why, for so many people, religious life has become so dull? Remember, the family and the community stagnate without the impulse of the individual. The community stagnates without the impulse of the individual. And the impulse of the individual dies away without the sympathy of the community. The impulse of the individual dies away without the sympathy of the community. Let us heed the words we just heard in the second reading from St. Paul. Dearly beloved, he said, please try to encourage each other.